Hello, everybody. Is everybody with us? Not really. Some people are in their own space. They're in their own space. Yes. So we're trying to get a focus. As I was speaking about the mirror of the mind, actually the Nisringadev prayers, right, are preliminary prayers which are meant for two purposes. One is protection, and the other purpose is for protection from ourselves, which is the higher level. So not only protection from external demoniac influences, but protection from internal contamination. So that links to what I'm talking about, because I'm talking about the Chaito Darpan, the mirror of the consciousness. And that the mirror of the consciousness said is covered by dust. And Prabhupada explains the dust of material existence, all the activities of material life, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, service paradise. Basically, I mean, that's what I saw as I drove into town. What can I say? These things cover the consciousness, and the result is that it is like a mirror covered with dust. So when a mirror is covered with dust, what can we see in it? Not much. Some vague contours. Therefore, it's not surprising that there are so many concepts of spirituality in the world, that it's like a marketplace where you can buy this, that, and everything, and nobody knows what it is. One day we are with Hare Krishna, tomorrow we are with the Sufis, the next week we do some Buddhism, and why not? It's all spiritual. Yes, when there's dust on the mirror of the heart, one cannot distinguish very much of the image. But ultimately, when the heart becomes purified by the mantra, then Chaito Darpanam Marjanam, then the cleansing process begins. Chaito Darpanam Marjanam Paham Paradavapi Nirvapanam. Says, and the forest fire of material existence becomes extinguished. See, why is material world dangerous? Why? Because it's like a bushfire. It's out of control. It's blazing. Sometimes here, sometimes somewhere else. Right? But like, for example, somewhere there's an oil spill going on. Forest fire. Somewhere there's an earthquake going on. Forest fire. I was in South Africa some few months ago, and there was xenophobia. You know, suddenly there were huge riots, and they were killing people left and right on the streets. It was getting serious. It sort of looked like, maybe time to get out of here. Anyway, the forest fire of blazing material existence. That is really what we're facing. You may not see, but that's what it is. And when we purify the consciousness, yes, then we connect with our roots, with ourselves, with our true selves. So this is the essence. So this is from a prayer which we find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The success to come. These prayers are attributed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These prayers will really protect us. Can I say? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, This time, Krishna appeared in a golden form. It is said that 5,000 years ago, Krishna was in Vrindavan, and Krishna one day sat down under a tree at the Yamuna. It was at Imlitala, which means it was a tamarind tree. And Krishna was seated there under that tamarind tree. And at that time, he went into a deep meditation, and his body became golden. 500 years ago, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had a golden complexion, sat down in Vrindavan under that same tamarind tree, and then his body became blackish. So what was going on? It is said that Krishna, when he was on this planet, Krishna, the entire planet changed. Everything became auspicious. There was opulence everywhere. There was peace everywhere. Beautiful rivers were flowing. The land was fertile. The air was fresh. There were ample of jewels and pearls and all kinds of opulences everywhere, and gold was easily available on the surface. It didn't require deep mining. It was just easily available. Suddenly all the natural opulences were there, and actually the quality of life was extremely high when Krishna was present. Because when Krishna was present, he blessed the entire world. And all the constellations of stars became auspicious, and auspiciousness was coming, and all astrologers could see great auspiciousness is there now. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimitedly attractive because he has all good qualities, all natural opulences, anything that is attractive in this world, we find in Krishna. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasasasriya jnana vairagyuschaiva sanam bhagam itingalam. It is said he had all beauty, all knowledge, all wealth, all fame. He had all strength and all renunciation. And all these qualities are greatly attractive. The other day someone asked me, why is renunciation attractive? I mean, all wealth, all right, we can understand. All beauty, all right, we can understand. All strength, okay. But renunciation, what's so good about that? Is that not? Renunciation is very attractive. When someone is not affected, we see that. When someone is not affected by lust, when someone is not affected by greed, when someone is not affected by anger, when someone is transcendental, then that's very attractive, because we can see this person is not trapped like everyone else. This person is free. Free, everyone is trapped. Trapped by the senses. You see it, you gotta buy it. You see it, you gotta have it. You gotta pay. No, we don't want it. You do it anyway. You can't stop it. You know, or you know, you gotta pop it in your mouth. You gotta do it. You know, you gotta eat it. Anorexia. You gotta stuff yourself, even if you don't want to. Grow. All these compulsive things. Compulsive liar. Can't help myself. Gotta do it. And even when it's not necessary, I lie all the time. Compulsive lie. I lie for the sake of it, you know. And that's not a lie for a change, you know. Compulsive lie. But, you know, I lie to myself. Compulsive lie. And so all these addictions. No, and someone is free. That is very attractive. So, in this way, we could see how everything is perfect and attractive in Krishna. He has all these opulences in full. So, therefore Krishna naturally attracts the love of devotees. Devotees, they understand that the actual position of human beings is to serve. They say the Dharma, the word Dharma, is a word we may have heard many times. Sometimes the word Dharma is translated as religion. But other times the word Dharma is discussed as the true nature. The true nature. Because religion anyway means that to religion literally means reconnect with our true nature. So Dharma means refers to our true nature. It said the Dharma of sugar is sweet. The Dharma of water is wet. The Dharma of fire is hot. And the Dharma of the living being is to serve somehow or other. Why is it so? Because service is a symptom of love. Service is about giving, not about taking. It's about giving. It's about contributing, making a sacrifice, giving. Giving ourselves, giving everything we have. Just, I like this theme and it's been on my mind a bit lately, so I mentioned it before, and I mentioned the example of a mother who has a plate, a nice plate with food, and suddenly this grubby little kid puts its dirty little hands right in the plate, right? And the mother says, "Oh, little darling, you know, please, you take."
Right? Whereas if you would do that to me, I would go, "Ah,
get out of here, you little monster." But because there's love. See, I don't know the kid. Right? But for the mother, there's love. Yes, give. So love means giving. That's the essence of love. It's about giving. And this is truly the foundation of our being. Giving. We are designed for that purpose. To give. We are not designed to take. As long as the world is on the take, that's where the difficulty comes in. When everyone is on the take for himself, elbow for me, elbow for you. Sorry, boat people, sink. Yeah? We are Australia and we have a cap, and here it's great. You guys sink. Yeah? You get the idea, right? Not about giving, not about caring, not about including my happiness. My happiness and then others' happiness as well, you know. I mean, of my immediate friends and, you know, circle of influence, oh yes, yes, yes. But the rest, you know what I mean, they can fall off the planet and I couldn't care about it at all. You know, but it's like, you know, Nepal got shaken and had a big earthquake and I rolled over onto the other side and kept on sleeping. You know, because it's far away of my life. So, but to give. So to give means, if we really take that, to accept what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Suridam sarvadehinam. Suridam sarvadehinam means to accept all living beings as our own. To become the well-wisher of all living beings. That's Krishna. And if we become the servant of Krishna, his instrument, then we also become the well-wisher of all living beings. And then it's not only my happiness, then it's everybody's happiness. At that stage, love is complete. At that stage, one can say, yes, now our love has become mature. You know, children, yeah, in the beginning, they are very self-centered. Basically, their mother is their servant, and whenever they want, the mother has to supply. And slowly, slowly, a more social sense begins to develop, where they expand their world and begin to, first it's the family, then from then a little bit of community comes in, some friends, go to school, get some friends, and gradually consciousness expands, where one may even start to identify with the nation, and the welfare of the nation. But ultimately, we have to identify with all. So this spirit is there in the purified consciousness, a consciousness based on love, on giving, on happiness. So that means cleansed, a cleansed state of consciousness. So that's actually what mantra does. Sometimes they ask me to speak about how the mantra relieves stress and makes you free from stress. I'm not sure if the mantra makes you free from stress. I've been chanting the mantra for 40 years, but I'm not free from stress at all. I'm stressing like anything. I am. It's my nature to stress. I've always was, so I'm someone in the fast lane, or can I say? Always have been. That's my nature. I'm fast. A little bit of a person. I create stress for myself, stress in people's lives. But what's wrong with stress? If it is for the right thing. What if we push ourselves for the right thing? What if we get out of our comfort zone for the right thing? What is wrong with that? So when I have to speak on stress relief, boy, I don't know what to say. I'm not a lot for words, you call. Spiritual life, we talk about being free from stress. Stress is okay. It's part of life. Relaxing is also okay. Yukta hara viharas cha, says the Bhagavad Gita, that we must engage stress and relaxation, both, for the right cause. It has its place, right? Sometimes you got to stress a bit and sometimes you got to relax a bit. And if you relax all the time, you turn into a blob. Some sort of jellyfish, right? A boneless creature. That doesn't sound really very attractive to me. Rather, no, I've always been like a little enterprising and always been someone with a dream. I always say life, if in life you must have a dream. In life you must have an ideal. In life you must have a goal that is great. Otherwise, life becomes dry like anything. And then you think, like, what am I living for? I don't know. It's like I'm living to live, sort of. I'm eating to eat, sleeping to sleep, and thinking to think, and no dream. So the dream must be there. And so the dream, is to do something great in the world, to ourselves. Change and grow. Years ago, I was in charge of admitting people to an ashram in India. And one day, from England, someone came. He was a mathematician. What do you do for a living? I'm a mathematician. All right. Pleased to meet you. I'm a mathematician. I'm doing my best with the UK accent, you know. a mathematician. And he, I said, well, why do you want to move into an ashram? He said, well, you know, I have made some calculations and I've come to the conclusion that the goal of life is self-improvement. Well, I was impressed. I don't know how in the world he calculated it. That is over my head, you know, quantum mechanics or whatever he brought in. But somehow they got the right answer. He got the right answer. Life is meant for self-improvement. It really is. What else is it meant for? Just to survive and slowly grow old, day by day. Yeah, that's the way it goes, little by little. Jeez, I didn't have those bags under my eyes before. Yeah, I never did. And then at one stage, you know, did I brush my teeth or not? I can't remember. But you can check your toothbrush if it's wet. It gets to that. Just wait a minute. Just wait a while. I met a guy on an airport, and he had a t-shirt. And the t-shirt said, heard it all, seen it all, done it all, but can't remember it all. I told him, great shirt, great shirt. Thank you very much. So, what to say? Yes, we must have a dream. And what is a greater dream than to become filled with love, right? Than to become filled with good qualities, than to become a wonderful person. You know, one type of people have always intrigued me, and those kind of people are the saints. You know, like in the Catholic Church, you burn candles and for saints, and in India you have Santas, and of course, you know, in Finland they say you have Santa Claus. You have different saints, right? All over the world, saints. And saintly persons are interesting, because saintly persons, they have an inner state of happiness, which doesn't depend on externals, you see. It doesn't depend on what they have or who they're with. They are just inspired from within. So that is something that appealed to me when I saw that. And so I read a lot about saintly people. And yes, that inner, and if you go cross-cultural, you see that somewhere it is the spiritual connection. It is the connection with the Supreme, Lord, that makes the difference and that makes a person saintly. Without, not possible. So saintliness is very rare. You know, where do you find a saint nowadays or in the past? To find saints is rare, and in the history of mankind, saints are rare. But according to the Vedic scriptures, it is interesting because Vedic scriptures, they say, kid is bright. Vedic scriptures, it gets a little difficult if the kid is too loud. So Vedic scriptures, they say that the saintly state of consciousness is normal, and that they say that all other states of consciousness are mad, are different degrees of madness. So you know, we have our standard of what is normal. And that is based on the common denominator. If everyone drinks coffee, then coffee is normal. Yeah? If everybody smokes like a chimney, then smoking is normal. If everyone drives like crazy, then driving like crazy is normal, like that. So normal is just determined by the common denominator and in the world. But actually many things that go under this nomo of normal, they look pretty crazy if you think about it. Yeah? A lot of things in the world are actually pretty crazy, not so normal. So according to the Vedic scriptures, normal means that which is the consciousness of the saint. So it said actually everybody should be a saint. The whole population should be a saintly person, everybody. The whole street should be saintly. Imagine what the street would look like if everyone was saintly. Imagine what service paradise would be like if everyone was saintly. Imagine what a place it would be. No more locking doors. No, you don't have to pay, you know. We just give it out for free. And no problem, they give it to us for free as well. Because where there's saintliness, people start giving. And when people give, so a whole different mood. Not the commercial mood, you know, so much, here's your bill. Okay? That's a business mentality. That's not a saintly mentality. So in this world, amazing. Imagine a surface paradise, which would be really paradise, where everyone filled with saintly personalities, who all are focused on their connection with the Supreme Lord. Imagine. If everyone was into mantra chanting, if that mantra hotel was really a mantra hotel, imagine, you know, they'd give the management to us. Yeah, we would take it and, you know, fulfill its meaning. Imagine if everywhere, if everything that would be served in service paradise was prasadam, if there was kirtan everywhere all the time, imagine what it could be like and what would happen, right? What would happen to the whole thing? Everything would change. You know, if everyone was a saint, in service paradise, the karma of service paradise would change immediately. You know, the weather would change. Everything would become perfect because the karma would be perfect. The whole world would change in that way. Yeah. It would become like a Shangri-La, people. Yeah. And when everyone was a saint, suffering would be diminished. People would live longer lives. 100 years would be normal. Well, everybody would be at least 100 years and still fit. Not like crooked and all bent over. No, fit. It's possible. Because all these limiting experiences that we have in this world is all due to karma. Action and reaction. We're building up karma. Roast some flesh and eat it all, what you think? We also have flesh. So for flesh, there will be flesh. For taking flesh, you must give flesh. Okay, that's not a good idea. I don't like to give flesh. Can I give some money instead? For now you can. You can for now. But later you must give flesh. Flesh for flesh. So like that, karma is not so so easy, not so, so, and it all piles up. So the whole service paradise is loaded up with karma and everyone's walking around with piles of it and the whole atmosphere is very heavy. Fortunately, there's a Harinam party coming down the street burning up some of that karma. Right? Oh, come on. Ooh. This is my karma. But it's not the... it's not enough to burn up all the karma. That will only come when everyone starts to chant the mantra. Chetu darpanam marjanam bhavam ahadavakmi nirvapu. Now we end up. Everyone is free. You don't want to force anyone. You cannot. We cannot. Ultimately, it's a matter of choice. But it's logical. It is logical. And this whole thing of karma in the world. It's something to think about. That every action is a reaction. And if you think about it, what are we doing, you know? Mowing down rainforest with endless chainsaws, oil rigs, you name it, you know, just like the ocean looks beautiful, but then I look at what you call this magazine now again?
National Geographic.
Thank you. How did you know?
Very good.
You're good. I'm impressed. National Geographic. And then National Geographic is good, right? National Geographic is published an article about 7 billion people on the planet. And it just showed, you know, and then there was even an app, you know, on the iPhone and so on. So I got the app last year, and it was really an interesting app. I liked it because it showed everything that was going on the planet. And how the ocean was like getting affected, you know, by all the acidity, and how the fish were getting smaller, and the little, you know, what you call these little seahorses in English? What's the word for that? How do you call them? We call them in Dutch. We call them seahorse. I'm not sure. Yeah? In English also?
Seahorse.
There you go. How the little seahorses, you know, my favorite as a kid, right? I mean, they are kind of like suffering tremendously under the acidity, eh? Keep your hands on my seahorses, eh? And so on and so on. So the acidity in the ocean, pollution of the ocean, so many other things, you know, like were being shown there. Mm-hmm. But recently, they've taken it offline. They took the app back. Ooh, Big Brother took the app back. It just doesn't work, it's gone. It disappeared. It's never existed. But I had it. I tell you, I used to have it. I had it. You may not believe it, but I had it. Anyway, National Geographic is explaining to us what's happening. So that's all karma. That's all karma. We do it to the environment, and it comes back to us. And if we kill the seahorses, maybe we have to become seahorses. Did you ever think of that? So not that I want to scare people with karma, you know, that this is like, you better watch out or you're gonna burn in hell type of lecture, but it's not that one. But at the same time, the thing is, I myself, I got burned a few times in life, right? I remember we were driving in the car, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, I was flying with 100 k's an hour, and I landed on the part that you usually sit on. And that's why still these days sitting can be a little difficult at times. That's actually how it started. Yeah, what can you do? I didn't sit for a while after that. What to do? So, it makes you think, you know, when things like that happen. So I'm not so much into thunder and you know, all that, but into, you know, well, why do we fly out of cars? It's just by accident, coincidence, nothing more. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. It could be just a reaction to previous action. Anyway, saintliness, that is what we are aiming at. And if we think about that, it's not in fashion. It's not in fashion, I must say. But if you think about it, it's pretty good, you know. Because then we can have real relationships based on love and trust. which is, you know, what we should have. But it's hard to trust, because we can't even trust ourselves. So how to become saintly, ultimately, is by hearing, first by hearing, and then by hearing transcendental knowledge, and then by chanting mantra, and then adjusting our life according to transcendental knowledge, so that we become non-violent. And instead of taking, that we start giving, so that we start to act for the welfare of others. And if we do so, yeah, then the world changes, we change, and the whole atmosphere becomes saintly, and as a result, surface paradise could become like a celestial planet. It could transform into a celestial planet. Believe it or not, that is possible. And that is, yeah, my conclusion this evening, how to turn surfers into a paradise. Anyone has a question or a comment? That would be most good.
Some people are afraid to give because they've been hurt in the past. How do they overcome that?
Yeah. Some people are afraid to give because they've been hurt in the past. True. Therefore we are careful at first. And therefore we begin in a community of people who are like-minded. And in that community we can start to develop such relationships based on giving. And when we build enough strength in that community of like-minded people who are all committed to the ideal of giving, yeah, and we live in such a community of people who are committed to the ideal of giving, there we get strength. And then we can start giving to the people who are on the take. And then we overcome our fear.
Just to reverse that, sometimes we're also afraid of receiving. Sometimes we're afraid of depending on others.
Okay.
So what?
When people are not trustworthy, to be dependent on others is not a good thing. But when people are actually pure in their motives, and they have good qualities, when they're honest and reliable, then and not like having a hidden motive, then it's okay. It's like, you know, if I would offer a girl to start paying many things for her, then the girl starts thinking, what does he want? You know what I mean? Why is he paying all these things for me? What's on his mind? Right? Is it sex, or is it this, or is it that? You know, what does he want? Right? Looks like he has a hidden motive, no trust. But if everyone is free from hidden motive, then trust can build. Therefore, first a community of people who are committed to ideals, to pure consciousness, then trust can develop. And from there one can get the strength that one can start trusting people. And so on. And
Maharaj, you were mentioning about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turning black.
Yes, I didn't finish the story, that's right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
As we've heard that he left that place because he kept on turning black. Why did he leave?
So the first part, I didn't finish the story actually, so I guess I should finish the story first and then get into your question. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to turn black and Krishna used to turn golden. It indicated that Krishna was seeing the love of his devotee. And he was seeing the love of his greatest devotee, Srimati Radharani, who is golden in features. And when he saw that the happiness that Srimati Radharani experienced was greater than his own, he was puzzled. I am omniscient, but here is something that goes beyond my experience. That's amazing. So he desired to experience. So therefore, he became internally in the same mood as Radharani, the devotee, and he took a golden complexion, and he acted out the role of his of a pure devotee, totally dedicated to Krishna. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was in that mood of being the devotee of Krishna, went there to that place of Imritala, his body turned blackish and it turned into Krishna. He turned into Krishna, but he didn't want to be in that mood of Krishna. No, now I don't want to be Krishna. Now I don't want to be the Lord. Now I want to be the devotee. I want to be golden. I want to be in that mood of the servant who serves out of pure love. That's how I want to be. So that's behind the story.
Anyone else?
I ended up in a conversation with many people before where it's difficult to explain the fact that we are, as a nature, people who serve and want to give. Sometimes we find people who actually believe deep inside that they are takers or they are enjoyers. How do we overcome that argument?
Yeah. Well, I mean, fine, you know. If we are all takers, right, then the problem is that we are competitive, that we're in competition with each other. And that creates a lot of problem, and that's what you see, you know. You see that the factory owners, right, they live in beautiful mansions in nature, in an area where there's hills and trees and very beautiful. And the laborers of the factory are living under the smoke of the factory. Right? And they can have a short lifespan. They work, and he's enjoying. So the difficulty is that we can't all enjoy. And then modern times came and said, no, that's not a fact. Capitalism gave us the promise. Everyone can enjoy. Everyone. You know, there was a time when basically in the world there was aristocracy, and they were not many, and they would live in palaces and great opulence, and the rest of the people were actually living very basic and very simple all over the world. And then capitalism changed that. Capitalism said everyone can be a king. And now we all are king. We all have a chariot pulled by how many horses? How much horsepower is your car? We've got a chariot. And your majesty, what would you have for breakfast this morning? I would like, would you like some toast? The indigenous thing, or would you rather have some imported knäckebröd from Sweden this morning? We had the Swedish stuff already 3 days ago. Now, can I have some of those little Japanese breads? Yes, that's a good idea. We'll have those for brekkie today. Yeah, that's okay. Tomorrow we can go Gujarati. That's a marvelous idea, Your Majesty. Yes. What else would you want? Would you like some ice cream, maybe? Yes. Well, what kind of flavors do we have? Well, there is an ice cream parlor here. It has 27. Only 27 flavors? What kind of parlor is that? The parlor around the corner from where I grew up had 87 flavors, plus not counting the nutty crunches. Yes. Gosh, life is so austere, right? And then, and everything has to be enjoyable. When I was growing up, you know, soap was actually, you know, soap was for washing your body, for getting clean. Not anymore. Oh, no, no, no. This soap is enriched with vitamin E. Every time you wash yourself, you get younger. Don't wash too much. Yeah. I mean, you know, the shoes, they are specially designed by Italian designers, and the footbed in your shoe is actually massaging your feet and catching all the acupressure points which revitalize your essential organs. And in this way, you know, like you're getting healed while you walk. Oh, it's wonderful. Everything is just, oh, you know, there's no limit to enjoyment. So, oh yes, everything is enjoyable, everything is wonderful. And that's all possible thanks to capitalism, and we have it so good. And, you know, and the Greenpeace, they are the guys that spoil the fun, you know? These Greenpeace people, they just put all this disturbing information out there. Do you know about that? I mean, I saw a poster of these Greenpeace people, you know, and what it showed that the daily food package of people contains as many chemicals as there are in 20 aspirins. I go, come on, you know? Why are you giving me a poster like that? Another Greenpeace poster showed planet Earth with a nice house on it, home sweet home, but there was only one little chunk left, the rest of Earth had fallen off. And so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. Is it really paradise, what capitalism gave us? Is it really great? I live in Europe, you know. In the morning, from Stockholm, from Northern Europe, a truck leaves with biscuits, with Swedish biscuits for Spain. And at the same time, another truck is leaving from Spain with biscuits for Sweden. And they're driving all over Europe, and they need big highways for these trucks, you know. Why don't they just exchange the recipes? Gosh, you know. You see, the capitalism. It's money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. That's it. It's money, money, money. So now, it's that world of taking, you know, it's gonna mean exploiters and exploiters, cheaters and cheated. Yeah, that's what it's gonna be. Some are gonna, you know, just like the Animal Farm. You remember the Animal Farm? I like that story, the Animal Farm, when the animals kicked out the farmer, and then, you know, at one point the pigs, they said, well, you know, we'll take care of the administration, because that was lacking. And they said, and they started to walk on their hind legs, and they moved into the house of the farmer, and they started to wear clothes, and this, that. And then one day all the animals protested and said, I thought we were all equal. And the pigs said, yes, we are all equal, but some are more equal than others. Right? So when we're on the take, some are going to take more than others. Some are going to get the short end of the deal. How about that, Mr. Taker? Some are going to get the short end of the deal, and sometimes it's going to be you, and that ain't no fun. When, many years ago, a long, long time ago, and I came home at night, around midnight, and there's my best friend with my girlfriend in some sort of compromising position. So I'm looking at what's going on here, and they tell me that there are really amazing vibrations between us, and we don't want you here. I said, well, but I live here anyway. We don't want you here. So next moment I was out on the street, walking on the street, and I wasn't feeling very good about the situation. And as a result, there happened to be, all the garbage cans were out. So, you know, in that condition, I took it out on a garbage can, and I kicked over a garbage can. Within 30 seconds, the cops were there. jumped out of the car, hit me up against the wall, guns, everything, whole thing. I was arrested, spent the night in jail. Anyway, I told the cops the story and they said, okay, then, get out of here. And then they said, ditch the old witch, which I didn't do. Sucker that I was. Anyway. But it's like that, you know. It's not being on the take. Someone's going to get the short end of the deal. You see the point? But it doesn't work. And everyone's going to get his turn. And it's great when you're on top. But what if you're going to get the short end? You're suffering. Taking. No better. Everybody includes everybody else. Let's have happiness which includes the happiness of others. Then that's the best. Anyway, it can go on for 1 hour. Yeah. Oh, thanks. It's past 8 o'clock, not too bad.
First of all, thank you for that fantastic answer to Devotee's question. Can you ever overdo it in giving? Can you ever over, like, push yourself in giving? Or
ask Jesus Christ. Don't ask me, ask Jesus Christ.
But can we, but is there... Can we ever overwork ourselves, or should we always push ourselves to give? Should we always be
No, ourselves? I mean, giving, you know, I mean, it's we're not machines, you know, like, we also have to, there's giving, so when you take it in the mode of passion, you know, okay, always giving, I have to give, you know, but no, you have to take it in the mode of goodness. So mode of passion is you see only the immediate, and you only live for the moment, and you put it now for the moment, I gotta give, I gotta do it, I gotta give to everybody, you know, nobody can be, you know, everybody, oh my God, there are so many people, how can I give to everybody when you're getting totally overworked, you know, but anyway, gotta give to everybody, I'm going nuts. That may not work. Then the nurses come in and go, hey, we got a little pill for you. Yeah. That's not so such a good idea. No, we're talking, so not in passion, we're talking about goodness. In goodness means that we look for the long term. How can I, in the long term, have the greatest impact for the benefit of all living beings? And in connection with the Supreme Lord. That's the spirit, in the long term. So that means tomorrow is another day, and that's why I've been looking at a watch, because I'm thinking also tomorrow is a busy day, there's lots of things going on, so I'm not going to make it too late tonight, so to get a good rest, if it's still an hour's drive back, and then I'm going to take a shower, and so on, so that means I need about 1 hour and 20 minutes from this moment till I get to bed, which means if I would leave right now, I would be in bed at 9:30. So I got a half hour to play with, because if I am in bed by 10, then I can be the star of the morning program. It starts at 4:30 in the morning, where I'm supposed to be there and give the good example for everyone. If I don't, other people will take advantage, so, and they'll also skip the morning program sometime. So I am calculating all these things. Yeah. Anyway, what to do? I guess by now you got the point. I am a madman. I'm not a saint at all. That's quite clear.
Hey, get off it. Hey. I pay him. He travels with me. I pay him to ask questions.
I'll do whatever again, man.
Tie him up.
How can I become trustworthy?
How can you what?
Become trustworthy. How are the qualities of someone being trustworthy?
Mm. Samo damastabo so chung santi arjali vijatan vijanastikyam brahmakam svabhavajam. Samo, one must be equipoised in mind, not just, you know, thrown off by every little thing and overreact on everything. No, one must have an inner balance, in response from that inner balance. Then, dhammas, one must control the senses. Not that whatever the senses dictate, you got to do. And one must be ready to take some austerity. See, in life, no matter what you do, austerity is going to be there. You know, I mean, we were in Cronulla, staying in a flat, looking down on the ocean, and I had a great view of the surface. And it's not like, God, you know, they're lying there the whole day, and they can maybe catch, like, if they catch 10 waves, they're doing good. Serious, you know. 10 waves, and for that you got to lie in the water for at least 6 hours. Or 4 hours, maybe 4. 4 hours for 10 waves. Jeez, you know. Is it worth it? Yeah, really? 10 crummy waves. I was just looking at it, but gosh, you know. Hours and hours lying there, pedaling along that surfboard, you know, like a bird in the water. Until finally, there it is, there's a way. Yeah.
I wrote the verse of Shashastikam on the bottom of the board, so when I lay there, I tell
myself. He found a way.
Something else.
Somehow or other, I felt like looking at him and just see it. I got the right guy. I've got surface ears. They become narrow, you know that? The one in the ears, then the ear canals become narrow. And then, yeah, and I've got it. And I went to this doctor, friendly doctor, and he said he wanted to drill out my ears. I told him, forget it. Bizarre, right? I'm not a car. Yeah. Yeah. Drill out your ears, aren't they mad, you know? I mean, what kind of world do we live in?
There's also that one in 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where they're talking about Shushumar, the yogis meditate upon the cosmic dolphin.
The yogis meditate on the cosmic dolphin, eh? Wow. Hey, that's cool, eh? That sounds interesting. I meditate on Krishna. But I think meditating on Krishna is better than meditating on the cosmic dolphin. More exciting. I tried that actually, you know, years ago. I started meditation on the Ganga in India. I looked at one point for 20 minutes, and believe it or not, a dolphin jumped from my point. The exact point where I was looking, eh? A dolphin jumped out, yeah. So I was going, whoa, you know, I'm so realized. But then, you know, after a while, you know, okay, you know, a fish is just a fish. What does it mean, you know, a dolphin? So it wasn't, it didn't go so far, my dolphin meditation. When I started with Krishna, it really took off.
But he does have dolphin-shaped ears.
He Shakshay.
But dolphins he draws anyway. He draws dolphins. And the details I'll tell you later. Okay, so I don't know what else to do. So what should I do? Should I sing for 5 minutes? Or just to wrap it up? 5 minutes can be strong. But not more than that, then we really gotta go. According to the calculation. Ow! Jesus.